powered by passion. It's National Auto Care's Fixed Ops 5 with your host, National Fixed Operations Training Manager, Corey Smith.
Welcome to Fixed Ops 5. I'm your host, Corey Smith, National Fixed Operations Training Manager with National Auto Care. Today, I'm being joined by a very special guest, National Auto Care's CEO, Tony Wanderham. Tony, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Corey?
Very good.
Good.
So let's take a few minutes and tell the audience what got you to this point in your life and what is National Auto Care all about?
That's a long, long story to say what got me to where I am today. I kind of feel like I've been in the auto business pretty much my whole life. My family was in it before, from my grandparents to my dad, and kind of grew up in that environment. Started working at a dealership at 12 years old and working in used car get ready, starting cars and siphoning gas out of those cars so that I could sell it to the sales guys. So that was the start of my entrepreneurial spirit and thought process. And really just had met a lot of great people. I've done business with a lot of interesting organizations over the years and have morphed into, you know, NAC. NAC has been around since 1984, as I think, you know, most of us know, and was started out of Ohio. And we invested in that company back in 2013 with Trivest and merged the two companies. And, you know, today are, one of the top providers in the industry.
Yeah, that's great. The audio industry and us in general have been really resilient over the last 2 years in regards to technology, meeting dealers over Zoom, customers ordering cars because the dealerships don't have them in stock. And now we're dealing with high gas prices. So in your opinion, are we going to build upon that, what we've done over the last 2 years? And where do we go with that?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody can tell the future at this particular moment. It changes so fast and so many different things are coming at us, you know. But the one thing that you can always kind of look back on from a dealer perspective is they're resilient. They figure out ways how to really, you know, take advantage of the opportunities that are presented to them. From direct sales to consumers, you know, they've shown and continue to show that people want to do business with local dealers. How they take the delivery of the vehicles clearly has changed and it is a little bit different than it was, as really, I think, every aspect of the car dealer experience has been. And over the last couple of years, I don't think anybody would have ever predicted that we would have a pandemic that would shut down basically the world and, you know, then put us in a situation to come back out of it bigger, stronger, and better than we were, you know, before it happened.
Yeah. So, Well said. During a meeting with our team in February, you talked about the state of the industry. Can you give our listeners a high-level overview on some of the items you talked about with new and used vehicles?
Yeah, you know, it's a challenge right now, I think, for a consumer perspective to find vehicles that they want. And then affordability is becoming somewhat of a challenge. But, you know, at the end of the day, what we are seeing is really consumers that are resilient to the challenges that are being faced right now on the inflation side. It's, as I think I said earlier, it's interesting when you get your insurance quote and you see that your car has gone up in value by $10,000 to $15,000. You know, I don't, you know, clearly your home should have some appreciation to it, but your cars, we never expected that, you know, we'd buy an F-250 and it'd be worth more a year later than it was when you bought it brand new. So, you know, there's just a lot of headwinds that are coming at some particular point. I think more dramatically, it's coming from the value of vehicles and really the potential for their value to drop pretty dramatically, and what impact that might have on new opportunities when customers are coming in and are upside down versus today, either at a positive equity perspective or a neutral equity perspective.
Do you think the bottom's going to drop out eventually on these cars? Like, let's say I'm a consumer, I bought a vehicle and I ordered it, I got it. 3 or 4 years from now, is it going to be worth 20, 30% less than what it would have been without us going through what we went through the last 12 months?
You know, I think it's probably going to come down to what has always happened is customers who have stretched a little bit too much on their financing will have a challenge in trying to go trade in their vehicles. But, you know, over the last couple of years, too, people have done fairly well. There's been some stimulus that have been brought into the marketplace. And in a lot of cases, that stimulus has been used for down payments. There's positive equity on the trade-in vehicle. So average down payment's been up. You know, I don't see it to be so dramatic that it puts us into a recession on the auto side. But I still think there's going to be challenges that are faced and in multiple facets of the economy, not just auto, you know, even in the service drive. So customers who are purchasing vehicles, we're seeing inflationary price increases in parts clearly, and we're also seeing it when you're looking at labor rates. So, you know, having to pay more to employees increases the cost of the repairs that are being done and the services that are being provided. And, you know, hopefully we don't go to a perspective that it's unaffordable for customers, but you know, that's the reason why they buy our products as well, is because in the, you know, when they do have a challenge, they have something to cover it, and it minimizes that financial impact that they have.
Yeah. Do you think that the manufacturers are going to shrink the dealership's responsibility to have a bunch of cars in inventory and do a lot more ordering? Or do you think that's going to change too?
You know, if you're looking back at history, you're going to say that today you're in a little bit of a unique situation, and that at some particular point, you're going to see all those cars back on the lot. You know, hopefully that's not what happens. Hopefully the manufacturers can get to a build to order perspective or a quick delivery process. You know, consumers don't seem to be as dependent upon needing that vehicle today. They can wait a week or two. We might have changed some dynamics of the customer purchase process, but you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be about what we did today. Did we sell them a number of cars that we expected to? And then we start to get into negotiating price a little bit more as well. Then I think, you know, again, we'll come back, but you know, I kind of feel like at some point we're going to get to some normalization of inventory again over the next 12 to 24 months.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. With EV vehicles, especially for a company like ours coming out more and more, is this going to hurt the F&I sales department?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, I keep hearing about how EV is going to change the way that people purchase vehicles. You know, I think when you're looking at Tesla, Tesla's been high lease penetration, 3-year leases, 2-year leases. So in many cases, and they really didn't market F&I products to their customers. But in many cases, those cars are now starting to come back into the market, and EV is going to become much more palatable when you're looking at it from a used car perspective. On the other side of it, they're much more complex vehicles, and they need, and the parts that are going into those cars, even though there may be fewer of them, are much more expensive. And they're really unknown because these are new vehicles. You know, these are things that they're building complete new platforms, powertrains, adding batteries into those. So in my mind, those are the cars that need the most protection, not the least. And I understand that the powertrain is a less complex, has fewer parts, but you know, we owned a Tesla for 3 years. Every time we had a challenge with that vehicle, we had no place really to go. And if we brought it to the shop to get it done, it took 3, 4, 5 weeks to get the parts in to get it repaired. So, you know, the cost of that is very, very, you know, important for the customer to be able to cover those expenses and be able to be in a position, you know, that they have a viable vehicle to drive, either a rental or replacement vehicle. And then, you know, again, all the sensors, electronics that are on there, anybody who has bought new electronics in their home over the past couple of years, know they're going to break. And you're either going to need to replace them or find somebody to fix them. So, you know, reliability is probably going to be a little bit of a challenge, and I would expect that we'd see more sales of our products than we would see less, or a modification of them.
Yeah. I really like what you're talking about that, because I think, you know, consumers are really going to look at, okay, I really like this, but what does the service look like after the sale, right? I could go buy something on Amazon that's electronic, but what happens when it breaks, right? But if I go to an audio store that I can drive to, I know that I'm going to get good service, because if it does break, I bring it back to them. If it breaks, I have to send it back to Amazon, which, like you said, you could be without it for 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, you know, and again, if you really kind of look at a customer perspective on the service drive, they want their cars in and out as quickly as possible. They want a seamless process. That doesn't happen on the EV side at this particular moment. And again, dealers are going to have to retool. They're going to have to retrain. This isn't going to be just a click of the switch and now all of a sudden we're ready to go. You know, where are we going to have charging stations? Are those included in the contracts that we provide? There's so many ancillary type things that I think we're continuing to see changes in the market that EV is going to be here and it's going to be here to stay. Let's just remember there's millions and millions and millions of cars out there that are internally combustion. There is a substantial amount of units that are sold that are used and pre-owned. So, you know, is this going to change one day? No. It's going to be a progress over the next 15 to 25 years, of which I'll be retired by that point. So I won't be worrying about it.
I think you'll still be concerned about it. You'll still have talks about it. I can envision you doing that.
Yeah, me too. I'll just be sitting in an old folks home having the conversation with somebody over a cocktail.
Staying with that EV question, with stations, do you think there's going to be a charge? Like, obviously, there's a charge for gas, right? That's not free. So do you think there'll be a per gigawatt charge gas station or non-traditional?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's going to monetize something, right? I mean, at this particular point, it has not been anything that they've had to do. But, you know, with the investment that they're going to have to make, there's going to have to be a return on that investment. You know, I mean, some of the things that I've seen are pretty spectacular and interesting. And one of the biggest challenges with any EV vehicle is just range. How far can it go, right? And then having to then, not only do I, you know, you don't install a gas pump in your car, in your house when you buy an internally combusted, you have to install the, you know, the charging stations if you want a 50 or 100 amp. So, you know, there's an expense that goes along with that. It's not just I drive the car home, I've got to have that as well. But the one interesting thing that I've seen that I could see over the next 10, 20 years happening is, you know, some of the development of drive the car on the road and it's automatically charging while you're driving. So kind of look at an express lane at this particular moment, you know, in Miami or New York or wherever you're at, you're going to pay $3 for surge pricing to be in the fast lane. You're going to end up paying that to go charge your car. So you're going to be driving down the road. It's going to be like your new Apple phone that you can just lay on a surface and it's going to recharge. So while you're driving in there, they're going to charge you and you're going to be monetizing that. I mean, you know, look, we people at our age in the 50s and 60s, you know, Dick Tracy watches were out there. Well, they're out there now. You know, we never thought that was going to be true.
That is true.
But I think it'll become a seamless process versus a process now where you're having to plug it, find a spot, take time to do it. It'll be charging while you're driving.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's switch into technology because I know, you know, especially with National Auto Care, our core value is really being on the cutting edge of technology. What are some cool things out there that you like that dealerships can take advantage of now with what, you know, National Auto Care does?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a technology perspective as much. You know, everything really is tied into the DMS and how we input and extract information, you know, from the DMS, how we get the information to the customer in a quick fashion. You know, I think really the thing that over the last couple of years that we have learned is that virtual training is here to stay. It may not be as engaging as it was the first few months of COVID. You know, we as a company, when COVID hit, decided to not sell anything to anybody, to just dig our heels in and really provide as much support to our dealers and our clients as we could. And it really did. You had an engaging group of people that were had some time to think about what we were talking about and train. You know, I think the technology on the training side, I think the integration into telematics that has huge opportunity and dealers, you know, I don't think they really get the fact that OEMs are gathering all of this information on the customers that they sold cars to. And that customer to the OEM, you know, I know some people would question this, that they don't look at it as it's the dealer's customer. They look at it as their brand. It's their customer. They don't care if they go back to that dealer or somebody else that has that same brand up on the front shop. There is information that they're gathering that really drive opportunity sales. I mean, if you think about service contracts, if I knew that you had 30,000 miles, 60% of people don't buy a service contract, you were coming up to, you know, expiration of your service agreement, and we're push messaging out to you that it's coming due, you have an opportunity to buy it, and we do a month-to-month service contract for that individual so that they can have it on their vehicles. And what value does that bring to us? It brings a tremendous amount of value, because now we know that it's a good quality vehicle, and we can give them a discount on their coverages versus somebody that has had a car that's had multiple claims and has higher risk. Because right now we price everybody the same, you know, and that's for all of our products effectively. You know, if we had the telematics information, you can start pricing based on customer driving habits like personal lines insurance companies do now, you know, and the maintenance records they have. If you've ever, you know, if anybody's ever flies a plane, maintenance records mean more than the plane itself, to be quite honest with you, because you can't sell it without maintenance records. Telematics give you the opportunity to know when they, how they drove the vehicle, how they supported the vehicle and maintained it, and they should get a premium price for that. And I think that technology is going to take us there at some particular point. It's just a matter of our dealers are going to be the ones to do it, or are the OEMs going to control it?
Okay, well, that's well said. I love that. What are your three takeaways from this episode in your mind that a service advisor, an agent, someone of member leadership at the dealership can take away from this episode?
I don't know that there's anything I would say that they could take away. I mean, I think from our perspective, my personal perspective, my goal has always been to make sure that we think about the customer first, whoever that might be. If it's our agent, if it's the dealer, a relationship that we have, don't worry about what you make, what we make. Worry about them. When they're profitable, when they're making money, when they're doing well, we're doing well too. You know, we're all in many cases looked at as price, but really it's about the services that we provide, and dealers really do, and agents need to look at not only what products and prices that are being provided out in the marketplace, but the service levels that are being provided on the claim side. You know, our responsibility is to take care of your customer too, as a dealer in the service drive. You know, have some patience and understanding as to we all need to have. Let's, you know, work together on making sure that the process is as easy as possible for, you know, for your customer and for the insureds.
Okay, well said. Well, if you want to deliver a legendary customer experience that keeps the customer coming back to you and encouraging them to invite their friends, their family into your establishment, then you've got the gold standard customer service vision. Do you want a more cohesive team that delivers a higher level customer service that will result in more revenue for your dealership? We provide the tools, knowledge, training to unlock that potential of your dealership. For more information on this topic and others, or to submit a question, or to be a guest on the show, feel free to send me an email, csmith@nationalautocare.com. Tony, that is all the time that we have for today. I want to thank you for being a part of this episode. And I'll end with this question, like I do with every guest. Will you please come back?
I don't know. We'll talk about it later. Thanks, Corey. I appreciate it.
Thank you for watching and listening to National Auto Care's Fixed Ops 5 with Corey Smith, powered by Passion. Be sure to watch and listen to the next episode on the 5th and 20th of every month.